Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Paul Shields, for this March 13th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series. And let's jump right in. I want to get your thoughts, Paul, to start off today. Last night, we had a 10-game slate in the National Hockey League with some interesting matchups down the list. First things first, a potential Stanley Cup preview almost last night between the Florida Panthers and Dallas Stars. The Florida Panthers ended up winning 4-3. Did you get a chance to catch any of the highlights of this game? And what did you make of the Panthers coming out on top 4-3?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two good teams. Definitely two teams with Stanley Cup aspirations. Good game. I think what we're seeing more than anything right now really is that transition we see every March into April, into when the playoffs start, is that the transition of, you know, what the game looks like in the playoffs versus the regular season. And, you know, it certainly favors teams like Florida that are big and menacing and want to, you know, are not afraid of the physical aspects of the game. So it was, you know, it's just one game, hard to take too much from that, particularly out of conference rivals. They only play twice a year, if that. So I didn't take a whole lot from it other than it was a pretty entertaining game, and it's becoming more and more clear that we are switching to the playoff rules. It's playoff style now in the NHL. So these games are going to get, for the most part, I know there was some high scoring games yesterday. For the most part, these playoff teams are going to be tighter games, games that are harder to win. And certainly the ice is going to come a lot harder to each of the players.
Last night, in one of the most unsexy matchups out of all 10 matchups, the Chicago Blackhawks absolutely dummied the Anaheim Ducks. Normally, we wouldn't talk about that matchup here on the Isolation Series, except Connor Bedard comes the third youngest player in NHL history to record a 5-point game. What are your thoughts on what Connor Bedard has done despite missing some time earlier this season with an injury, and being able to come back and be the person that everybody seemingly expected him to be when he got drafted number one overall? Because I believe now he has 52 points in 54 games.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like the real deal, right? He the way he shoots the puck is second to none. He's got great vision and great hands. He's got everything you need to be a very good NHL player. So I think that he's still got to be the front runner for Rookie of the Year, despite what he missed due to the injury. He's come back and he's been on fire. And well, I think saw the third youngest player to record a 5-point game. So that's pretty darn good. He's going to be something special.
What do you think about people making the argument for the Calder from the gentleman, I forget his name right now, out of Minnesota? Do you think that he has a legit shot at potentially giving Connor Bedard a run for his money down the stretch here, or is Connor Bedard the Calder winner far and away, in your opinion, at this point, with about 16 games left to go?
I mean, I think awards are often narrative driven, right? Like, I think oftentimes it is the player with the most hype who can live up to it, right? Yeah, we've seen that in the past. So while I think, you know, there are players that will be in the conversation, Connor Bedard is at the top of the list. That's, you know, I think it's hard to, it is hard to argue that. Now, there's been some incredible rookies this year. Like, Logan Cooley has played great in Arizona. Carlson has played, Leo Carlson's played well in Anaheim. You know, Luke Hughes in New Jersey. I think you're thinking of Marco Rossi in or Brock Faber. They've kind of got two young, good players. Faber's probably a little ahead.
I'm thinking of Brock Faber. That's the one I'm thinking of.
So, but I mean, it's, you know, good for them. They've got two guys that could be on that list. Hey, even closer to home, Joseph Woll is an NHL rookie, right? And he's had a good season that was sidetracked by injury. But Bedard has been everything that he was touted to be. And the fact that he leads in points even after having the time off with the broken jaw, with all the hype, I don't think I've ever seen the hype train follow a player as much as they did Bedard, maybe in NHL history, and he's lived up to it so far. So I don't see anyone else taking it from him. I think something pretty crazy would have to happen in the last, you know, 20 or less games of the season.
Last but certainly not least, as far as an overall comment on the NHL for today's episode, and that is, we found out that Matt Rempe got suspended 4 games for that elbow to the head just the other night. We know that this kid has only played 11 NHL total games, I believe, and has already got quite the reputation. What are your thoughts on a 21-year-old kid coming in and making a splash? Good, bad, or indifferent, the way that he has, because even though I don't agree with it, you may not agree with it, lots of people have been really intrigued by this young kid for reasons I don't really understand.
Well, I think he's a very good hockey player. I think it's unfortunate that he's 6'8 or whatever, and he plays a rugged style of game, which has put him straight in the crosshairs of every fight. It feels like every night he plays. So for me, some of the hoopla around the player and his size and the fact that he's willing to do, you know, things like fight and hit and all that kind of stuff has sort of overshadowed if this player is any good. And I think there's a good hockey player in there. I understand the hype. He's a big guy. He can skate pretty well. I think he's got to learn how to throw a body checks at the NHL level, and he's got to learn to be more disciplined. Because he's thrown more questionable hits in more games than, you know, the average player coming into the league. He's fought more than the average player coming into the league. And I think that those things all lead up to, okay, here we are at a 4-game suspension because he throws an elbow and you know, knocks Siegenthaler out for who knows how long. So I like the player. I like the energy that it provides. The excitement of the physicality of the game of hockey, I think, is still real. But yeah, we've talked about it. I don't need fighting in hockey. It's not, I'm not that, that's not the fan that I am, but I understand the excitement around it. And not gonna, you know, I'm not saying anyone's right or wrong for wanting to see that. It's just for a 21-year-old player who's trying to make his name in the NHL. So this is an interesting and challenging way to do so. If you're fighting every night in a league that where fighting is declining. So I'd like to see more of the hockey player, Matt Rempe, and less of the UFC fighter, because I don't care so much about that. I like that he's big. I like that he's physical. I think there's a real hockey player in there. And I hope that getting dinged with 4 games maybe is a little bit of a wake up call for a young player to be suspended so early in your career. To figure out, hey, I got to figure out how to play at this level how to be effective, how to throw big body checks. But he's got, I mean, he plays with the same team as Jacob Trouba. And as we know, Trouba walks the line, but that would be a perfect guy to get, you know, some tips from, when to be disciplined, when to throw that big hit, and how to play without being the side. He's kind of a sideshow right now. So how does he get away from being that and just start focusing on being a good hockey player?
And I know that I had just mentioned my last comment for the day on the NHL, but one other thing popped into my head as you were talking, and I just want to get your thoughts. If you are a Vegas Golden Knights fan right now, are you concerned at all about your team going, I believe, 3-9 in their last 13 games? We know, because we talked about it at the end of the week last week, that they got some pretty good additions in Noah Hanifin and Thomas Hertl at last week's trade deadline. But are you at all concerned for Vegas fans with the way that this team has been playing in the last better part of 5 weeks?
I mean, I think this team will sort it out. They're the defending Stanley Cup champions, but they are dealing with some substantial injuries, right? And I know everyone wants to, you know, wants them investigated and wants to jump all over them for, you know, this LTIR and that. But missing Mark Stone is a big piece of their team. They're obviously the pieces they brought in, I think, are going to make a difference. Yeah, they haven't had a great run, right? 3-6-1 in their last 10, but they're also on a 2-game winning streak. They're still 6 points clear of the closest team to them in the playoff race, and they have a game in hand. Their math is good. This is a good team. I don't see anybody, truthfully, in the Western Conference pushing for that final playoff spot unless Nashville or LA fall apart. I don't see anyone catching it. I think in a lot of ways, I think there's probably 8 teams in the West that are set for the playoffs, and there's probably 7 teams set in the Eastern Conference, maybe 6. You know, there could be some argument to be made for Philly struggling. But you know, like I just don't think they're going to see a whole lot of movement, as from the teams outside looking in. So I'm not concerned. If I'm a Vegas Golden Knights fan, maybe I'm a little bit concerned, but you've watched this team come off the mat so many times. They're always going to make a push, and the math is in their favor right now.
Okay. Moving to Major League Baseball for a moment. I just want to get your thoughts on a couple of things. You and I talked earlier this week about not putting too much stock into spring training baseball, but I want to get your thoughts on one very intriguing thing for me, at least, and that is the Baltimore Orioles. We know that they made a lot of moves this offseason to supplement their young core that took a big step last year, and plus they have the number one prospect and son of former really good major leaguer himself, Matt Holliday, in Jackson Holliday, coming up and more than likely making the team out of spring training. This team is 15-3 so far in the spring. Any thoughts necessarily on that?
Well, as far as their record goes, how many of those points do they get to take into the regular season?
0.
Oh, good. So that's exactly how much I care about their preseason record. Just to make it, it doesn't matter. We've seen terrible teams go basically perfect in the preseason and be terrible. We've seen really good teams do horribly in preseason and be fine. So I don't care about their preseason record at all. As far as their players, they are in a unique spot where, you know, for years we were, you know, for years Baltimore was lurking, right? And we thought, boy, the players that they're picking are pretty good. They've hit on more of these prospects than they've missed. They're not quite good yet, but we could see the potential. And I think a couple seasons ago, they went on a pretty interesting run right near the end of the year that made the wild card expanded playoffs more interesting than I would have expected. But they ran out of steam, right? When they really needed to get going, they just didn't have it in the tank. Last year, they come out and they were great. They looked great all regular season, and they ran into the problem that a lot of young teams who are starting to get good run into, which is adapting to playoff baseball. Right, adapting to the intensity and the differences from regular season to playoffs. So now, you know, this team has to take the next step. They have to understand how to continue to be a good regular season team while looking for the more in the playoffs. So I like the players they've got. I like a lot of what they've done there. I like a lot about the way the team plays. So I think they're going to be a good team again this year, but it is going to be, they do have the challenge of continuing to grow. And we know that sometimes these things aren't linear, right? We know that sometimes the rebuilds and teams that get good, they kind of stumble, right? They fall back and they don't always necessarily continue to climb. So it's their job to continue to be a playoff team in a really challenging American League East. It's always a tough division to play in, so they don't get any breaks there. But I think it's a good team, and I still think they're going to be very good this year.
Okay, and after we went off the air on Monday, it was also revealed that star Yankee player Aaron Judge also had an MRI on his abdomen, and that apparently has come back clean. However, they did also mention that his turf toe / fracture toe that he was dealing with after running into the wall in Los Angeles last year is still bothering him periodically. I know that you and I are not big Yankees fans and whatnot, but coming off of the breaking news on Monday that we mentioned about Gerrit Cole having an elbow MRI and whatnot, if you are a Yankees fan, which we are not, but if you are out there listening right now, would you be overly concerned that two of your big, big stars are huge question marks right now before the season even starts?
Yeah, I think you have to be concerned. You know, again, we were just in talking about Baltimore. You talk about the American League East, never an easy division to play in. And injuries to your biggest power hitter and your number one starter, there's no team in baseball that could probably withstand that for a long period of time, right? I think the Yankees are enough of quality on that team to stem the tide if they are short-term injuries, but you never like to start your season without players like that. And particularly in a division like the AL East, it can be real tough. If you get yourself into a hole early, it can be really tough to drag yourself out. So look, you, like you said, we're not Yankees fans, and I'm not losing any sleep over Yankees that aren't going to be, you know, dominating the Blue Jays. But we've said this before, every league is best when the best players are able to play. And it's not good when marquee players are out of the lineup because of injury, right? You want to see the best players. People come to games in every city to see players like Gerrit Cole and like Aaron Judge. So I hope their recovery is speedy. But I, as a Blue Jay fan, I hope the Yankees start is kind of terrible.
Now that we are 3 weeks away from the regular season officially starting in Major League Baseball, what are your thoughts from a Blue Jay perspective for a moment on the fact that Alek Manoah continues to be shut down with shoulder fatigue or shoulder soreness so far? And they really wanted to give him the opportunity to be the fifth starter and come back and have a redemption story, but that seems to have already been derailed somewhat. We know that there are a couple of young options down in AAA, Ricky Tiedemann chief among them, that might make the team as the fifth starter. But you and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I believe you said that if Ricky Tiedemann makes this team out of the spring, there is more problems than we think, and it now seems to be heading specifically that way.
Yeah, I think that the inefficiency of the Toronto offseason from a management perspective, it really shows in the pitching depth. I think if they were counting on Alek Manoah, or sort of penciling him into a spot in the offseason, I think it was a huge mistake. And not to, look, I'm cheering for Alek Manoah to find his form. I think that he has all the tools to be a very good pitcher. He's obviously struggling through something. And I appreciate that the Blue Jays are working and being patient with a young player who has these kinds of tools. I don't think that that is the wrong move. But what I do think is the wrong move is not bringing in something to buoy the back end of your rotation in a meaningful way. There's a lot of question marks.
Or the front in the case of Blake Snell. I'm not saying that they would go out and get Blake Snell, but right now we are in mid-March, and inexplicably Blake Snell is still on the free agent market, and he's the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah, so, I mean, something else is going on there. That feels like something else. I don't necessarily care the name. I'm totally happy with Kevin Gausman as your one. That's a really good pitcher. I think Berrios has found a way to be the pitcher we expected him to be. He had a really horrible year, but he really managed to settle things down last year and pitched pretty well. And Kikuchi earned a spot on this team again, right? Like, he had a terrible first season, and he was one of their most reliable pitchers last year. So I'm not – and Chris Bassett, the fact that he's fourth on the list to come to mind for me – tells me that the Blue Jays rotation is at least healthy, but there's a fifth day, right? There's a fifth day for every starter. And if you had penciled in there Alek Manoah, I think that's a complete failure by management to understand the progression of this asset and of this player. And so, yeah, like Blake Snell's a great example. Like, why not go and get, and I mean, maybe they've pitched to him. Maybe he doesn't want to come here. We've talked about free agents and the choices they get to make. But the overwhelming feeling I have for this team is they didn't do enough in the offseason. And so now I have basically the same questions I had from last year's team with less confidence because I saw what ended up happening to last year's team. So, you know, as a Blue Jay fan, I'm always excited. I love when baseball comes back for lots of reasons. But I'm not feeling particularly confident or good about this version of the Blue Jays because they look stunningly similar to the version that was disappointing last year, that was ultimately disappointing the year before. You know, we're going on 3 years of this team supposed to be competitive, and we've had two very disappointing ends to the season. Now we see what happens this year. So I am excited for baseball to come back. I am nervous about the Blue Jays, as I just simply don't think they did enough to support this core and make this team better. I believe this team stepping on the field for this season is worse than it was last year.
And on that same note, I'm going to ask you the same question I've asked you a couple of different times on the program. And that is, do you believe that John Schneider, all things being equal, finishes the entire year as the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays?
You know, the truth is I don't know anything about, I think what last year's decision and press conference and the whole issue in the game that they ended up getting eliminated, I have doubts on who's actually making any of these decisions. So I struggle to see how much impact John Schneider really has, because it sounds like from all the things that we look at, it looks like analytics runs this team. So I honestly, I have no idea. And if he does get fired, who are they going to replace him with? Is it going to be another robot that's going to do whatever the bidding is of the analytics department of this team? And I'm not anti-analytics. I just think you need to use the tools that are available to you. And sometimes, you know, sometimes your gut is right, and sometimes the numbers are right, and you have to use both. And I'm
sometimes your eyes. All right. Like, just
sometimes.
Yes.
Right. But I just think if you blindly follow one over the other, you're in trouble, right? The teams that do it the best have a good balance, a good creative balance of the two. And right now I don't see any of that. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer your question. I think the Blue Jays like Schneider. I think that he will get better as a manager. I think there are times where he's outmanaged himself, but then again, it's hard to criticize those decisions when you don't really know who's making them. So maybe they'll fire him by the end of the year, but maybe they like the fact that he just says yes to whatever they want. I honestly don't know. And that the tone in my voice will give you an idea, excuse me, of how I feel about watching this team right now. I have no trust in the management. I have no trust in the managers. I have very little trust in the players. So it's I want them to prove me wrong. I'm so hopeful that I am totally wrong, but I am concerned.
Okay. And then on that same note of being concerned, do you believe, as I do, that this team might be poised to win less than 90 games this year? And as we know, if that is the case in the cutthroat American League East, they probably won't even sniff a wild card spot if that's the case.
And that's where I think this team is most frustrating, if I'm being honest, is they're probably a good enough team to find a wild card spot again, right? They probably have enough pitching. They probably, if there's a regression to the mean for players like Vladdy, and Alejandro Kirk and other guys who did not hit particularly well last year, and there's definitely room for them to be more of what we're used to seeing, then this team will probably win enough games to at least be in the conversation. But at what point is that not good enough? You know, at what point do we see them challenge for an AL East title, which we expected, you know, two or three seasons ago, and they've not even come close to? So I think it depends on what your expectations for the team are. I want to see the team grow and get better, and losing in the wild card round is not growing and getting better, particularly in the fashion that they've lost.
Yes. Now, moving from Major League Baseball, I'm going to flip it on to you for a moment here, but I'm going to give you a moment to get it up on Uncle Google, and that very simply is, over the last couple of days, we have seen a flurry of activity right out the gate from the new calendar year of the National Football League, to the point where it legitimately has been free agent frenzy with signings and trades and different things like of big people going to new teams and different teams and things like that. And the reason I'm asking you to pull it up on Uncle Google is there's so many big moves, and there have been so many big moves over the last 36 to 48 hours. I want you to be able to look at the list and go down a couple of intriguing moves in case I miss any. I don't want to miss too many intriguing moves, but I will kick it off and ask you about this one. Right now, the Green Bay Packers are in an interesting spot as they let go of veteran running back Aaron Jones, only to replace him with Las Vegas Raiders running back Josh Jacobs. We know that Josh Jacobs had a down year last year as opposed to Aaron Jones being one of the most consistent backs in all of the NFL. Do you, however, believe with all of those young, youthful offensive pieces, including Jordan Love, who had some unbelievable moments last year that we talked about, Josh Jacobs will be a good complement for this offense and help them take the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a very good running back, but I think, you know, what we're seeing, we've talked about this a lot over the last couple of years when it comes to NFL free agency and just the way teams are constructed. There's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of loyalty to running backs anymore, right? Like I think Jacobs gets a 4-year deal. So, I mean, that's not a bad deal, but you know, I don't know if he's going to be a significant upgrade. I think that he brings a different style. I think that he can help a young team, but I think that what we're seeing now is it running backs becoming more and more interchangeable. And you're able to get a lot of production out of young players who are just cost controlled compared to some of the, you know, very expensive free agent signings that we've seen over the last couple days.
Another one that I want to get your thoughts on is 36-year-old Kirk Cousins getting a 4-year deal from Arthur Blank and the Atlanta Falcons, very similarly to the Green Bay Packers and their young, talented core that I was talking about on the offensive side. You can say that also about the Atlanta Falcons with Bijan Robinson and Drake London and Kyle Pitts and a few others as well. And despite the fact that you and I don't really cheer for the Atlanta Falcons, and we make no bones about that here on the program, I do believe that because Kirk Cousins was not ever really a mobile quarterback to begin with and a traditional pocket passer, him coming back from an Achilles will not be that different for him. And the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons is also from the Sean McVay tree, which is the same that he had in Minnesota last year, which he was absolutely light enough at the time of his injury. So what do you think is going to happen for the Atlanta Falcons fans? Because to me, even though Kirk Cousins is 36, I would be excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's Cousins, although like he's not in the elite class of NFL quarterbacks. I think we can all agree to that. He's put together a pretty quality career, finding ways to win at times with teams that maybe didn't look like they were going to be able to do much, right? Like, I think that team in Minnesota, I don't know if anybody was really counting on them to be anywhere near the playoffs, and he did a pretty good job with that offense. So I tend to agree with you that his mobility has never been his calling card. It really is about making good reads and trying to drop back and, you know, trying to play mistake-free football. And that's not a shot. That's what his bread and butter is. So I don't expect the injury will hold him back. I think too, he's also sort of an underratedly tough quarterback, right? We've heard stories about him playing through some pretty gnarly injury and some pretty things that might've taken out other quarterbacks. He seems like a guy that's really liked. It seems like everywhere he goes, there's he gets, you know, praise for being a real locker room guy, locker room leader. So, and in the division that the Falcons play in, you know, with no disrespect, man, like Tampa Bay won it last year with Baker Mayfield at the quarterback position. Baker had a good year. Tampa Bay played well, but it's not like this is a juggernaut of a division. I think that while committing 4 years to a 36-year-old might be challenging, we know that in the NFL, the contracts are a little different. Players can be released and whatnot. Not all the money is guaranteed. So it's a pretty low risk signing for a player who does a good job of managing an offense in a division that's not great. And the Falcons, you know, they weren't that far out of the mix in a division like that. So it's a good move. If I'm a Falcons fan, I would be at least excited that you have a competent quarterback that's able to lead that team and take a shot at that division.
And moving to the Jacksonville Jaguars, we know that they had one of the most epic collapses to end the year in NFL recent history, at least, no doubt about that. They were poised to make the playoffs and ultimately did not. And now Doug Peterson and that organization did a head-scratching move, in my opinion. And they went after Mac Jones and brought in the former number one overall pick. Now, to back up Trevor Lawrence, who himself is a number one overall pick, do you find this as strange as I do? Because if I'm Mac Jones, I would have wanted more of an opportunity to probably get a fresh start. I still am a relatively young quarterback. And as we saw with Trevor Lawrence, who's to say that with a new head coach, he wouldn't be poised to flourish? Because Urban Meyer made Trevor Lawrence look like a substandard quarterback necessarily in his first year. Then Doug Peterson comes in and gets everything out of Trevor Lawrence that everybody expected. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case all the time, but like I said, Mac Jones and Trevor Lawrence have very parallel, you know, histories so far.
Yeah, I think Trevor Lawrence is a much better quarterback. I think that anyone that projects Mac Jones to be anything but a backup is wishful thinking. But I think that he creates some depth at the quarterback position. Part of what Jacksonville's downfall last year was Lawrence being hurt and them not having an option to go to. True, like really. Right. He gets that. I'm pretty sure it was a rib injury or a core injury of some kind for him last year. And he's out there trying to gut it out, getting smashed by 300-pound defensive linemen. So I think that this is more a move to for Jacksonville to create some depth at the quarterback position and support Lawrence more, but also understanding that most teams in the NFL need to use two quarterbacks at some point during the league, and you can't just have, you know, a guy off the street. You can't just have a nobody as your backup. Mac Jones showed some signs of being a decent quarterback in New England, but the truth is, I think that he tops out as a number two, and now maybe with a little bit of pressure off, he can start to develop his game a little bit, and maybe it takes a little bit of pressure off Trevor Lawrence too, not thinking that, you know, if he's real hurt, he's going to have to go in there and try and make something happen. I know football players and most pro athletes are built a little different, and they want to do things, they want to battle through, but I think having a competent backup is not a bad idea. Again, in a division that, like, the AFC South is not a super strong division. They're like, and, you know, so with the Titans sort of unloading a little bit, and I think Indianapolis has put together the same team. But you think the Texans will take a step this year? There's lots of reason to believe that you could do well in that division.
Yeah, I agree with you. For lack of a better term than what you're saying is that Jacksonville has set themselves up to be a new version of Taysom Hill and Drew Brees, for lack of a better term, because for years they had that tandem quarterback thing going pretty well, and it worked out nicely for them. And to your point, now Trevor Lawrence, I'm sure this morning, woke up and said, you know what, I don't necessarily have to put on this Superman cape all the time now, and can just go out there and play my game, hopefully confident that if I do get injured, Mac has my back and has enough game still within his relatively young self to go out there and do a good job.
Yeah, I think so. I think something to that effect, right? Like you said, it could go the other way and create more confusion in a team that's had a lot of confusion over the last couple of years. But I think that the hope is that it creates depth, and it's a young team, so you keep that young team, you know, developing together. That's you know, I think that that's a positive thing. And yeah, I think that Jacksonville can be good. They got to clean up some stuff from last year for sure, but I like the depth of quarterback. I don't think it's a big problem.
Okay. And one of the most intriguing signings for me, and that I'm already excited to watch play out, is Derrick Henry going from the Tennessee Titans to the backfield of the Baltimore Ravens. And if I'm an NFL defense, I'm shaking my head going, what the actual F is going on right now? Because we know that Lamar Jackson has proven to be deadly with his legs at any particular point. But at the same time, if I'm also Lamar Jackson, I am also excited now because I know that I may not have to do that as much this season, and I could save some hits and my legs a little bit because I have one of the most reliable running backs, over the last 6 or 7 years in the NFL, who's an absolute freight train of an individual at 250 pounds, runs like he's only 215 because he has that much breakaway speed still. And I'm, like I said, I'm just tickled, excited to see the combination of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I think Derrick Henry is sort of a pod favorite. I'm a big fan of that player as well. I do wonder if there's going to be enough of the ball to go around for those two players, right? Those are two players who love to have the ball in their hands. So I'll be curious what kind of scheming and what they do to make it work. But I like that has the potential to be absolutely electric. Like you mentioned, Lamar is already amazing when it comes to things that he can do on the field. you add an element of power and just an amazing athlete like Derrick Henry to that mix, that's going to be something worth seeing for sure. So I'll be curious to see how they scheme it and how they make it work with the two of them both wanting the ball as much as they do. But boy, I'm interested to see how they figure it out.
Going back to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a moment, I forgot to mention one individual as well, and that is Gabe Davis gets picked up from the Buffalo Bills. He's a young stud receiver. We know this. With a propensity to still drop the ball a little bit. But how do you think Gabe Davis potentially helps this receiving core moving forward in Jacksonville as well?
Well, I mean, it gives him another weapon, right? And I think that with Trevor Lawrence developing as a pro quarterback, that gives them a little bit of size, a little bit of speed. He played well for Buffalo, like you said, with, you know, maybe there's some work to do on his drops, but, you know, a guy that gets like nearly 600 yards last year, 7 touchdowns, he is a threat, or he's another threat on a team that needs more depth, that needed more last year to get over the hump and get to the playoffs for a second time, you know, and show and try and, you know, develop further. I think you need more depth and you need more weapons, and I would consider him a legit weapon.
Subsequently, are you a little concerned if you are a Buffalo Bills fan today, because we've seen over the last week that they've needed to rectify some of their cap issues that they presented with themselves, and they have shed a lot of great players, whether it is Poirier on the defensive side of the ball, or some other offensive moves as well. They've let go a lot of key pieces on that team and haven't really replaced them yet. So if you are in Bills Mafia, are you a little nervous today?
Well, I mean, look, I'm not gonna claim to know the ins and outs of all of the players that are coming and going. Obviously, there are names here that I am familiar with, and there are names that I'm not as familiar with. But I think if you're a Bills fan, you've got to be concerned every year that they don't make it, they don't live up to the potential, right? You have, in my opinion, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I think a lot of people share that opinion. He's in the prime of his career. This team has been poised to compete for a few seasons now, and they continue to struggle to get out of that AFC. So I think there's lots of work to be done, and I don't think you're comfortable if you're a Bills fan until they can say they've won something. And right now, they've kind of won nothing.
Okay. And is there anybody else on that list that we haven't talked about that we should over the last couple of days?
You know, I think we've hit sort of the big ones. I'm seeing a lot of, a lot of familiar names, but maybe near the end of their careers. So I'm not, there's nothing here that really jumps out at me. We talked already about Russell Wilson and the Steelers. I don't necessarily understand that. But yeah, it's a lot of backup quarterbacks and a lot of backup quarterbacks and depth players other than I think the ones we've highlighted here.
The one that I will mention is Deontay Johnson got traded from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not exactly sure offhand to what team, if you can let everybody know that. But we know that earlier on in the year, he was questioned on his effort on a few different plays, and you can see it on replay that he really checked out when he shouldn't. And that's not the first time that we've seen an NFL player on the offensive side of the ball do that. But do you believe that whichever team is getting Deontay Johnson got him for a low-risk, high-reward situation? Because if they can get his attitude in check and get him re-engaged, he can return, in my opinion, to be one of the top wide receiver threats in all of the NFL.
Well, we talked about this a couple days ago or whatever. An unhappy wide receiver in the NFL couldn't possibly be. I don't know. I think every GM thinks they're smarter than the last guy and thinks that they have the magic sauce to, you know, make something work that didn't work somewhere else. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts on that until we see him play and see his attitude actually change.
Is there anything else that we should cover on this Wednesday, March 13th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series that we did, my friend?
I don't think so, buddy. I think we covered it.
All right, fantastic. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. And as always, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so. And we appreciate our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. But until we come at you with another edition of the show, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.